everybody. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and who are the Paradigm Shifters that I'm talking to? People who are making a difference in the collective at this time on the planet. Creative and very exciting people. One of the big problems these days is housing all over the world, and my guest is Kelly Hart, whose magic is done with green homes, natural building, and all kinds of other options for housing. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thank you.
How'd you get into all this? You were a construction guy at the beginning, weren't you?
Well, I have done a lot of construction. My father was into construction to some extent. So I grew up around lots of building going on, and especially he was interested in working with natural materials and recycled materials.
Oh, your dad was he? Your dad?
So I had a very early introduction to the aesthetics and the practicality of working with materials which are now considered green or natural. I guess you might say it came naturally to me.
So no play on words intended, of course.
No.
Where did your dad build his houses?
We grew up in Idaho, in southern Idaho.
Mm. I'd like to talk about the word sustainability, because what you've got here is green homes, and you also use the word sustainability, which we're all kind of into. But I'm going, what exactly does that mean? So for your dad in Idaho, what was sustainable there? It's different from place to place, isn't it?
It is different from place to place, because a major part of sustainability is being local in your sourcing materials.
Mm-hmm.
And local in terms of design that functions well in a particular locality. So there's what might work in one place won't necessarily work in some other. And I always recommend that people who want to contribute to a more sustainable world and their own life, that they move towards working with local natural materials as much as they can, especially in their buildings.
Hmm. And so you lived in Idaho. Is that a rainy climate?
Not particularly. It was fairly arid in that particular area.
Hmm. I was going through your websites are absolutely marvelous, you know.
And well, thank you.
I was looking at all these, I live up in the Northwest, and for a while I lived in Tucson. And in Tucson, there was a lot of talk about, obviously, adobe, rammed earth, straw bale, all of that kind of stuff, eh?
Yes.
And you're in Mexico now, but you've lived in drier climates. So I'm used to those being sustainable, but now I'm up in the Northwest. What kind of buildings can go on where it's really wet and has lots of snow? And
well, in a climate that's fairly cold, which a good deal of the Northwest is, you want to have a house that's well insulated.
Mm-hmm.
And earth bag building and straw bale building and cordwood building are a number of natural ways of assembling a house that has high insulating values. So
can you do straw bale where it's wet?
You sure can.
Hmm.
A well-designed and built straw bale house basically has what they say is a good hat and a good pair of boots, which is to say it needs a good foundation and a good roof. The foundation needs to keep the bales well away from the ground, and the roof needs to be not only watertight, but it needs to be a roof with long overhanging eaves so that the water that runs off of the roof doesn't run down onto the walls so much.
Mm.
And as long as you have a good plaster and leave the walls breathable, then your straw bale construction can work almost anywhere.
Hmm. So when we had a little talk, I want to ask you two different questions. Maybe I'll try both of them.
Okay.
When we were talking about it earlier on the telephone, you were saying that the fashion of straw bale has given way to earth bags. Can you talk a little bit about earth bag housing, and is that still continuing, or are they all being used at the same time?
Sure. Earth bag building is newer than straw bale in terms of being introduced into the building community. Straw bale has been around, well, for half a century or so. Some of the first straw bale buildings were built in Nebraska, and some of those are still standing.
But weren't they built in Europe hundreds of years ago?
Straw bale building actually started in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. The building technique has proven itself to be durable and very effective, and it's particularly sustainable because it's using a renewable resource, the straw itself,
mm-hmm.
Which often is a byproduct that's discarded. In a lot of places they just burn the straw off the fields when they've harvested the grain.
Hmm. What kind of plaster can you put on them that's sustainable, or is there?
There are a number of plasters. Earthen plasters are excellent, and lime plasters are good. And these are both good because they tend to be breathable. It's important not to put a moisture barrier on the straw bale walls, so that they, if they do happen to get damp for some reason, then they can dry out. And then really just for the health of the occupants, it's generally better to live in a house that has a breathable skin. It's kind of like people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our skin breathes, and it needs to, because it helps us stay healthy.
Did you learn all this from your dad, or did you just know this, or did you study it?
I've been reading and discussing these topics with for quite a number of years. I actually didn't talk about sustainability that much with my father. He mainly taught me techniques of building with stone and recycled lumber and found objects. That's the kind of aesthetic that I got from him. But over the last couple of decades, I've become more and more convinced that it really behooves us as a species to really find ways to conserve energy and to conserve resources.
And you make it very possible, don't you?
Well, that's what I'm dedicated to with these websites, is to present viable, simple ways where you can make yourself comfortable and use these local natural materials.
Well, so let's go back to earth bags. We didn't finish that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's
no,
pretty,
I didn't.
Pretty exciting. Mm-hmm.
Earth bag building is not too many people actually know about it. It's gaining popularity, and I think the comment that I made when we had a previous discussion was that earth bag building is now what I perceive straw bale building was maybe 15 years ago.
Right. That's
in other words, it's just at the beginning of the curve, and that it's going to become much more popular over time, and one reason for this is that earth bag building is something that can be done anywhere in the world, whereas straw bale building and other techniques really rely on those bales of straw, and they don't grow straw just in anywhere, but
in your backyard.
But earth bag building basically uses whatever material you put in the bag, and that can be as simple as the dirt that happens to be where you want to build, or it can be some material that's hauled in from not too far away. For instance, in Colorado, I built a pretty good-sized house with earth bags, and I filled the bags with a kind of volcanic stone that was available in that area. called scoria. And this is a very lightweight stone that has a lot of air pockets in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantage of that is that it's a natural insulating material.
Hmm.
And I was building this house at over 8,000 feet in the mountains, where it gets darn cold, and it worked out beautifully. And you can even fill the bags with other kinds of organic material. For instance, rice hulls, which are another byproduct of the production of rice, when they take the chaff or the hull off of the rice, it's not something that's edible. And yet it is, again, a very natural insulating material, and people are actually building houses with bags filled with rice hulls.
And how do you get the rice hulls? Is that in the marketplace?
Yes. It's best if you're in a locality where they grow rice, and, you know, there's maybe a dozen states in the U.S. where rice is grown, and if that's the case, you can often get truckloads of rice hulls for practically nothing.
Hmm.
And I've noticed that recently some of the companies that market rice are actually beginning to bail up the rice hulls and selling it already bundled in sacks that you can actually build with the sacks of rice hulls as you can buy them.
As they are. Well, you know, that's really interesting, actually. I have another kind of interesting question, at least for me it's interesting. If you're using probably polypropylene bags, I don't know
yes.
if this is for the rice hulls, maybe, but if you're using polypropylene bags, then they don't breathe, do they?
Well, they do, actually. It's not a solid material. It's a woven bag. And I don't know if you look at the bags that rice and certain kinds of feed come in for animals, and polypropylene bags.
Oh, I see they're kind of a plasticky looking, but they have a weaving in them.
It's actually woven material, and so they actually do breathe.
Hmm. Now, earth bags and earth ships. How many? Tell me about earth ships, or tell the people that are listening about earth ships, because they look to me to be, whoa, that would be awkward and cumbersome, but I know that they're a real support for the recycle world and getting rid of tires.
This is true. Earth ships are a very specific design that came out of the Southwest in the Taos area. An architect there, Mike Reynolds, came up with the earth ship concept quite a while ago, and he's been promoting this and doing a good job of getting people aware of the benefits of this and building parts of the house with tires, with used tires, is just one aspect of the whole earthship concept. They also use other kinds of recycled materials to build walls, for instance, old cans and other recycled materials, but the main idea behind an earthship is the specific design. It's what's called a passive solar design. In other words, it's a shape. It's shaped. It's built in such a way to capture the sun for the heat that you would need in the winter in North America, and then it will allow that heat to be stored in the building itself, in the floor and in parts of the walls, and actually in a large area that's a berm or a mound of earth that is behind the house.
So that it's partially seemingly buried, is it?
That's right. It's partially buried, and so the energy that accumulates during the day when the sun is shining is stored there for overnight and for actually a very long time. And this provides a very comfortable ambient temperature over a long period. And that's one of the points I'd actually like to make about sustainable building or natural building is that these buildings, if they're well designed and well built, will actually be more comfortable than a standard home, you know, that's made with typical lumber and typical insulation and other typical materials. And that's because passive solar design will stabilize the temperature over a long period of time. So you get it up to a comfortable temperature, and because of the way it's built, the house wants to stay there. It always wants to provide the comfort that you feel.
You make it sound like it's got a real heart for us.
It does. Oh, yeah.
Well, tell me this. So the heat comes from the solar, the solar panel, right?
It mostly passive solar is heat that comes in the windows.
Oh, I see.
And then the sunlight strikes usually the floor or other objects that are in that space, and these are what are called thermal mass materials that will absorb that heat and hold it over a long period.
So what are the materials? What are they? It's not the tires, is it?
No, although the tires, to some extent, do serve that function, because the tires, really all they do is act as a form for holding earth, and an earthship is, you know, parts of the walls are tires that are stacked, but each one of those tires has been pounded full of soil.
Right. Okay.
And soil, when it's pounded, very densely, becomes a thermal mass material. Thermal mass materials are really heavy materials. Any kind of a stone or tile or brick or soil, water. These are thermal mass materials because they'll absorb heat and they'll hold it for a long time.
So are they hard to build? The Earthship thing, there's an Earthship 101 is, I think, YouTubes that are on, hey, that tell you all about them, right?
Sure.
But they look...
There's a lot of information out about Earthships.
And so are there a lot of them out there, and are they really hard to build?
It takes a fair amount of labor to pound those tires, especially. And then once you've got that part of it done, there's a fair amount of labor that goes into plastering those, because you end up with a lot of crevices between the tires, and all that has to, if you want a nice smooth wall, all of that has to be filled in and made smooth or plastered to suit your aesthetics. And so all of that takes time. I often point out that the Earthship design and many other designs that might utilize tires could much more easily be built using the earth bags.
My understanding about Earthships is that I heard that they were developed in order to use up all these tires that were in landfill.
That is definitely part of the function and the purpose of Earthships. It's a good thing. I support the use of tires that way.
Mm-hmm. I do too. But I think that the earth bags, for me as a woman who's never built anything, I was excited. I thought, boy, I could do this. I think I could do that. I think you could too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's pretty exciting stuff. So the other thing, I was looking at your website and looking at the earth bag section, and some of the bags are like 6 or 8 feet long. Is that right, or is that just how it looked?
There actually are buildings that are built with tubes of the material material that's used to make the bags.
Okay.
And you can buy this tubular material. It's the same polypropylene that the bags are made out of in very long rolls, you know, like a mile long. And so you can cut the bag as long as you need for a section of wall, and you can actually build a house by coiling it like you would
a pot. Yeah.
Exactly. and people are doing that.
Wow. Well, it looked like fun. It just also looked like it might be pretty unmanageable to be trying to coil with this humongous tube.
Well, that's That's true, and it takes you know, a bit of a crew or a team to effectively use the long tubular bags. In the house that I built, I used individual bags, partly because most of the work I did all by myself, and you know, I can handle one bag, especially the light scoria that I was using, quite easily. And so I, you know, would merrily go on building my house and didn't need other people always there to help feed material up and you know, like a conveyor or something to get the material into the bags and placed properly on the wall.
Mm. You also use for window space. In one of the pictures I saw, you use like a slice from a culvert, like a round, like a piece of a pipe, right? Only it was huge.
We did. We used culvert couplers, actually, mm-hmm. the parts that you put two culvert pipes together with. Those served as almost perfect frames for some circular windows. Mm-hmm. We also used some very old or antique metal frames, tires that had been on some kind of farm equipment at one point. You can introduce any kind of a curved arch shape or a circular shape or even a pyramidal shape if you put the point pointing upward. Any of these shapes can be put into an earth bag wall for openings for windows without the need for any kind of you know, a piece of wood or a piece of steel or something like that to support the weight
right into,
from above.
Wow, that's great. Are they all over the place? Like, what's the number? What kind of numbers are we looking at now with people doing these?
You know, I really can't answer that because, you know, nobody's keeping track. I know that from the research that I've done in assembling the earthbagbuilding.com website, where we've profiled probably 40 different projects around the world, that it's happening everywhere, you know, on every continent, that's for sure.
Well, it's very exciting, isn't it?
I think so, yeah, because it's simple to do. It's something that does not take very much training.
Mm-hmm.
It's inexpensive, and it's very effective, you know, for some of the reasons I've already stated. But also, it's extremely durable, and it's resistant to floods. It's resistant to bullets. It's resistant to wind.
Earthquakes. Are you getting any resistance to, how are the building codes? How are they accepted in different kinds of communities?
Well, yeah. Very slowly. But they are being accepted, and I believe, to my knowledge, at least 4 states in the U.S. have permitted earthbag buildings, and I'm sure more than that, really. And of course, a lot of places around the world don't have codes, but it's you know, and that's one of the reasons I say that earthbag building is the place where Straw Bale Building was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of decades ago, because straw bale wasn't accepted by the building code officials very readily either.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, during the interim time, the whole idea has taken root, and you can build a straw bale house in practically any state now.
But they started to get pretty expensive.
Well, this is true.
And that can happen with this, I bet you, huh?
Well, you know, there's a lot that goes into building a house.
Right.
And building the walls is just, you know, it's not even 50% of it. All the rest of the stuff that goes into a house is the same, regardless of what the technique of building is. So, you know, there's so many factors that affect the cost.
The electrical, the plumbing, all of that.
Yes, all right. All of those utilities need to be established. The size of the house, the amount of labor that you hire or not. You know, for instance, I built a it was about a 1,200 square foot earth bag house in Colorado. Took me about 3 years to finish it. I believe that with all of the things that I have in there, all the plumbing and the electric, and including solar panels, solar electric panels and system, the whole thing cost about $35,000.
Wow.
But that's because, you know, I was determined to source things that were local and didn't cost too much.
Hmm.
And I did most of the work myself.
So if you spring for workmen and all that, then it changes the whole thing.
Sure it does. And one of the reasons the straw bale can be more expensive is that there's a fair amount of labor that goes into the plastering of both sides of the straw bales.
Hmm.
You know, that's all manual labor, and some of it's specialized labor.
Hmm.
And so it doesn't, you can't just put the building up and have it done as quickly as you can with a standard, you know, timber frame or wood framed building.
So let's go back to the plaster part. Some of what I was reading about was papercrete.
Yes.
Different kinds of plaster. Is that different kinds of plaster? Or is that something?
Yes. Well, papercrete is an interesting material that was introduced about a little over 10 years ago in the Southwest again. And
was
and
it your idea?
No, it wasn't mine, although I know the people who did invent it. And it's a material that can be used for building in its own right. I used it as a plaster. Mm-hmm. On the earthbag building that I built in Colorado.
Tell people how you created it, or what you created in. I think
sure.
It's hilarious.
Papercrete is actually using old paper or recycling paper such as newspaper or junk mail or old phone books, any kind of a paper product. Almost any kind of a paper product can be repulped, and then once it's in a slurry and has been broken back down to its, you know, fiber, then you can add just a little bit of Portland cement and other mineral materials to it, and create a material that you can actually either pour into forms, or you can make blocks out of it. Or you can use it as a plaster, like I did.
Hmm. So you have to tear up all the paper, or do you have a tearing up process?
You need some kind of a machine, like a big blender. And I made a couple of different machines to do it. The first one was just a little barrel mixer, like a 55-gallon drum with a motor and a blade in it, like a kind of like an austerizer or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then I graduated to something much larger. That was a tow mixer. It's a machine that I would pull behind my car, like a trailer, and it utilized the rear end of a car in such a way that when you pulled the tires would cause the central blade to spin around.
So you worked it by driving it, by pulling it.
Yeah, I'd hitch up the tow mixer onto my car and fill it up partway with water, throw in some old newspapers, throw in a little bit of cement, and put in some sand or some other material that was handy, and then I'd drive around the block. And by the time I'd get back, the material was ready to use.
Kelly, that's a genius, hey? You must
I can't
laugh
take credit for inventing that. It was one of the guys who invented papercrete itself came up with that design, and he helped me build it. But boy, it sure does work.
That's just hilarious. I love it because it just feels like everything is so reachable from an average person's point of view. You know?
Uh-huh.
And another thing that I saw is there's so many things that you could be telling us about, which you are, of course. There's something called water bricks or something?
That particular phrase doesn't ring a bell. I mean, there's a lot of different products that are made with, that are brick-like. And
okay.
Some of them are just like compressed earth blocks or similar to adobes. And you can build with those. You just need a press to ram it. And some of those are just, hand operated.
Okay.
Or there's very fancy ones that use hydraulics and whatnot, but I'm not sure what you're referring to.
That's okay. I found it. I found it on your website, and I'm looking through my papers as we talk. So have you lived in a number of these? Like, how do they work out?
Well, I can tell you that the house that I built in Colorado worked out splendidly. I would hardly change anything about it. It was a good passive solar design. These were domes made with earth bags, and they were connected together. There were three different domes in such a way that it just made a house, and there were lofts in there. And the building was really quite comfortable. If it was a sunny day, even in midwinter, when the temperatures would plunge to around zero at night, and maybe not even get above freezing during the day, if it were sunny, there were nights when I wouldn't even have to turn our auxiliary heater on.
Really?
We had a wood stove, and I wouldn't even have to turn that on because I would have captured enough heat from the sun to keep it comfortable in there.
Hmm. Were you surprised about that?
Well, I didn't really know how well it was going to work. I knew it would work to some extent because I read enough about the principles to know what you needed to do to make it work. But I was certainly delighted when I discovered that it worked that well.
Have you thought of getting in one of these economic incentive programs with Obama and trying to get some sustainability in housing and communities of earth bag houses or whatever? Have you thought of any of that kind of approach? Or maybe the government will approach you.
Exactly. A lot of people do approach me. I tend to spend a lot of time, tending my websites, answering questions from all over the world. The greenhomebuilding.com website now generates an average of 6,000 people a day.
Oh, wow, really?
To find out, various aspects of sustainable architecture and natural building. So that's where my energy has gone, is in providing the information so that people can use it. And certainly, some entrepreneur could pick up on what you just suggested and run with it.
What about any like schools or communities? Are there any of that? Has anywhere in America, for example, anybody done that kind of thing, like an intentional community or a school or a building for a huge number of people or anything?
Yes, there are a number of projects that are institutional projects around the world, and also there are schools that teach a variety of these kinds of techniques. I have pages up at greenhomebuilding.com that are devoted to education and listing of workshops that people might attend in their region.
Do you do workshops, Kelly?
I have, but I rarely do. Like I say, most of my energy has gone into online stuff. At the moment, I'm working with a school here in Mexico that's a school for underprivileged and some orphaned children. It's run by a local Catholic priest, and about half of the students are indigenous Mexicans. They're either Huicholes or other indigenous Mexican tribal people who tend to be very, very poor. And I went to the school and gave a presentation about earth bag building and suggested that I could come and teach over a period of time, teach the students how to make a very small earth bag dome, mm-hmm. something that was inexpensive, that they could build for less than the equivalence of maybe $1,000, that would be provide them with excellent habitation.
Mm-hmm. And weatherproof.
Uh-huh. And there was a lot of enthusiasm for doing that, and so I teamed up with a local green group that wants to promote sustainable things, and we, you know, managed to pull together enough funds to buy the materials to actually initiate this project, and it's about half done now.
Wow, that's really exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gratifying, mm-hmm. and people are learning about it through media and through experience, and it's not just the students. It's, you know, other staff and teachers at the school and other interested people who find out about it come by and either watch or lend a hand.
Well, I think that's brilliant. I'm going to ask you what you would recommend people beginning, like, for example, if I know some people up in Washington State who are young and they need a home, what would you
mm-hmm.
recommend? Would you recommend that they go to a class? I know your website, which I've already recommended.
Yeah, sure. Yes, I think that become educated. Don't just dive into a project, immediately without doing some good research about it. And if you have an opportunity to take a workshop or a class, then do it, because you can. A lot of people learn, physically working with their hands. You can discover whether a particular technique is suitable, for your aesthetics or not.
It seems like there's quite a broad, there's a lot of aesthetic possibility. I mean, there's a million ways to put it together, isn't there?
There really is. And a lot of the natural builders tend to have a more organic, kind of natural kind of aesthetic. But you can build to please virtually any kind of aesthetic, even with earth bags. It's one of the beauties of earth bags is that they're so malleable. It's like working with clay. You can make anything.
That's great. What's vernacular? What does that mean, the vernacular house?
Vernacular is a term that refers to the old ways, the established ways of building. For instance, a vernacular form of building in Mexico is adobe, with adobes.
Right, okay.
And yet, nowadays in Mexico, you almost never see people build with adobes anymore because it's become passé. Hmm. People think, oh, that's old-fashioned, I want a modern home. And so they'll be building with bricks and cement blocks and concrete and steel, all of these things. You can build a very substantial and durable house with these materials, but they don't have the same property. They feel different, and they are not as green or sustainable as the old adobe is. And there are vernacular ways of building everywhere,
mm-hmm.
And all you need to do is look back in history and see how people used to build houses, and often you can learn from that and discover, why they built that way, and at least understand that there are parts of the old ways that can be incorporated into modern life.
And a lot of the old ways, I mean, way back, a couple of hundred years back, they pretty much had to be in alignment with the nature around them, didn't they? Didn't they have to?
Yeah, sure.
Be
because
sustainable.
Industrial materials weren't available. A lot of the kinds of building that's become popular in the United States and over much of the world has been dictated by industry. Industry has the motive to make products that they from which they can make a profit.
Right.
And also the building industry, the contractors, have the motive to build houses and buildings quickly, and so these impulses have come together to provide the way things are done now. But if you look at it from a sustainable point of view, it's inappropriate, and it's quickly becoming less appropriate all the time. And I think that if I were to emphasize what the paradigm shift is, that we as human beings need to move towards now, is to find those ways of living, whether it's building or any other aspect of your life habits, find those ways where you minimize the amount of energy, the cost of the fuel, the energy that is embodied in those materials,
mm-hmm.
And also look at the source, you know, the resource, and see if it's a renewable resource or whether you're mining something from the earth that is over time going to negatively affect our planet. So that's where we need to move, is just always look at the cost of the energy.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important. And also creating energy, some of the solar panels and so on, they can create energy, can't they, for others as well?
Exactly. Uh-huh. You want to find renewable ways and clean ways of producing energy. And that's a lot of what Obama has been talking about with his desire to get people to look towards renewable energy.
And he's getting people to take things in their own hands to participate, isn't he? Like, I was just thinking while you're talking, how many women could actually build their own houses this way and not be, you know, not be daunted by a system that seems sort of male or tough or something?
Yeah? Absolutely. There are quite a few women who I've met and talked to and have found out about who have built their own houses or who are involved in trying new things out, and much of this stuff is quite accessible to women.
Yeah, I think that's very exciting, because I told you I felt like it was possible for me when I read this stuff.
Wonderful.
But the other thing, and I've never built a house before, but the other thing was that you've got a whole section on buildings out of a recyclable material like steel, all kinds of different things. Do you want to talk a minute about that, the different kinds of... Well, you haven't mentioned container buildings, but that's one that we keep hearing about as well, isn't it?
Sure. Recycling is one of the fundamental principles of sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can reuse something, then, you know, it's it no longer has a negative impact on the energy system that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If you reuse old windows or old wood or the old shipping containers that are stacking up on the docks, then you're finding a way to utilize those materials productively that does not require greater manufacture. So I heartily encourage people to recycle. Even houses themselves can be recycled. You
mm-hmm.
can have an old house that needs to be moved and move it to a new location and refurbish it. And you can buy materials at the secondhand stores. There are many ways of finding materials that are often quite useful and quite inexpensive, and that are recycled.
I really agree, and it's very exciting when you see some of this stuff visually. Have you ever done those kind of houses that have gardens on their roof, or the roof is sawed and they grow things?
I love the whole concept.
I do too. It's fun.
I haven't built one myself, but I'm heartily in favor of it. In fact, the whole idea of building underground, whether it's with an earth shelter design like you just described, or an earth berm design like the earth ships that we were talking about, anytime you sink a house down into the earth in that way, several things happen. One is that the earth itself acts as an insulating buffer, so that the ambient temperature, whether it's too hot or too cold, doesn't have to be the earth itself can mitigate that, and then the other thing is that if you build a roof garden, then it frees up the footprint of the house back to nature.
Yeah, really.
So you can, you know, you can plant it with something that will attract the birds or the butterflies, or you can, you know, plant crops up there. And also it absorbs, you know, the carbon dioxide. So you're creating, a living environment rather than sterilizing what used to be a living environment.
Yeah, it's amazing how much healthier people can be when they're in a natural building. You know, people are so much
healthier. I think you're right, yeah.
Tell me about ice houses. I don't know if you know anything about them, because I don't, but it just occurred to me while you're talking, people who live in ice houses up in the North Pole, if it isn't all melted away. They're warm inside, too, aren't they?
Well, and that's an interesting point that you make, that an igloo made out of ice can actually be comfortable. And one of the reasons is that, you know, ice is freezing, obviously, but it doesn't get any colder than that. So
so you could actually warm it up by having people inside of it and life inside of it, eh?
You sure could, and that's the other key to an igloo is that they're very, very small.
Hmm.
So you get a group of people in there, and you know, you can even have a small fire in there if it's designed properly, and it takes very little energy to bring it up to a temperature where you can, if not be very comfortable, you can at least survive.
I don't want to try that particular one out. So you're doing, but it's still interesting. So you're doing a school that you've talked about. What's next for you? What are you going to be working on next, Kelly?
Well, my main focus really is just continuation of providing the information that I am. I have a panel of experts at greenhomebuilding.com who for many years have been very good to answer questions from the public. So your listeners, if they go there and have any questions relating to any of this, there's a form and you can fill it out and send in your question. And if I don't know the answer, I can pass it on to these experts. And then the wonderful thing about this process is that I periodically post these questions and answers back on the website, and I have it all organized. So it's an increasing body of knowledge.
Yeah, your websites, all of them are very interesting. What about the blog? I did not get to the blog. I thought about that just before the show started.
The blog is really a way to reach out on a topical basis, you know, whatever I happen to be thinking about and want to write about,
mm-hmm.
or to point out some interesting thing that I just discovered, or to publicize some particular event or something like that. For a while, when I first started the website, I had an e-zine that I'd send out, like a little magazine, via the email. And that got to be kind of awkward because I was always sifting through the addresses and spending a lot of time just doing clerical stuff. And finally, I shifted over to doing a blog. So the blog is really just another aspect of discussion of the same things, and people have the opportunity on the blog to make comments. So it's another way for interaction.
And now I know that you also, this is just before we end, I wanted to say, I know that you studied film and so on. Have you done any filming of your buildings and of your plans? I know you also have a website that's got a lot of home plans on it, which is really valuable. But I wondered if you'd filmed some stuff.
Well, I have. I made two videotapes, which were then converted to DVDs, and those are available at my website. Mm-hmm. They are, the first one was a general introduction to sustainable architecture, and the second one is a documentary about how I made that earth bag house that I described. And it's called Building with Bags, How We Made This Particular House.
That sounds good. And I have to sign off now just because they're going to hook us off stage. But this has been really informative, and I sure appreciate your spending this time with us and all the work you're doing, Kelly.
Well, I've very much enjoyed the conversation, and I hope that your listeners have too.
I hope so, too. And don't forget to do Green Home, what is it, greenhomebuilding.com. And check it out. You'll learn a lot. And also, what is it, Dream Home Plans? Is that the other?
DreamGreenHomes.com is the plan site.
Okay, DreamGreenHomes.com.
And then EarthBagBuilding.com is the one that's just about earthbag building. And if you go to GreenHomeBuilding.com, that's the main site, and there are links to all these other sites from there.
Yeah, this is just really interesting. I recommend everybody to take a look. You might be building your own home, and you've been a great support today. Thanks for all of your time.
And thank you, Veronica.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that was really informative. Boy, I'm going to rush out in the backyard and build something. Bob, we have to do that. So here we all are, and I'm going to be seeing you from the perspective of Jackie Salvitti's show, ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness, Thursday night at 8 o'clock. I don't know what we're going to talk to the team about, but I get the privilege position of interviewing them and finding out what's going on in the universe and what's going on in the collective. And Jackie herself, the wonderful healer, light on her as she heals from her recent surgery. And then next week, I was excited to tell you all, we're going to continue, first of all, with the movement of our emotions through the collective with the Mercury retrograde and talking about the rise of the feminine. And we also have a paradigm shifter, David Pond, who's a wonderful man, a wonderful astrologer, who has a lot to talk about these changing times, the economic times, the rising feminine, perhaps even the existence of aliens or multidimensionality. I don't know, but he's a really interesting man. You're just going to love this show. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, I'm an intuitive and energy worker, and if you want a session with me, email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, no H in Entwistle. Or if you want to suggest another paradigm shifter, or give us feedback on Callie Hart and all this amazing stuff on sustainability and housing, and how actually easy it is for us to learn to build houses right from the dirt in your own backyard these days. So be good to hear from you. Let's call in the love, the universal love that belongs to all of us, and have reach through the top of our head, have it move through us and into our hearts, into our hands, and then have it sent back out to one another and spread all over the planet. And I want to say thank you so much for listening. We'll talk soon, and many blessings. Much love.